is case number 62910, the City of Yarrington versus Gutierrez. We have Mr. Balkenbush representing the appellant, Ms. Moore, and Mr. Surti representing the respondents. Mr. Balkenbush, do you wish to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
And would you like to reserve some time in rebuttal?
I'll reserve 3 minutes.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case presents the question whether Employers Insurance was a party of record to the administrative proceeding, as that phrase is used in NRS 233B.130. To our knowledge, this court has never answered this question in the context in which it is presented in this case, namely multiple contested cases with different parties that were heard at the same time pursuant to an administrative order of consolidation. Importantly, this order of consolidation did not state that Employers Insurance was a party to the contested case between the City of Yarrington Public Agency Compensation Trust and Mr. Gutierrez. That was appeal number 36690. Nor did this order state that the City of Yarrington and Public Agency Compensation Trust were parties to either of the contested cases between Employers Insurance and Mr. Gutierrez. Those were appeal numbers 37177 and 37262. Nor did the motion prompting the order ask the appeals officer to decide this issue. It seems today, or after this hearing, that this court is going to either conclude that Employers Insurance was a party of record to the administrative proceeding, or alternatively, that Employers Insurance was not a party of record to the administrative proceeding. However this court chooses to answer this question, in this case, respectfully, both answers do not result in the dismissal of the petition for judicial review filed by the City of Yarrington and the Public Agency Compensation Trust under the authority of the August 2012 Washoe County versus Otto decision.
Counsel, I have a preliminary question, and that is, isn't it true that the relief you seek, or that was sought, below would necessarily impact the Employers Insurance Group, and therefore they need to be a party to what's going on?
I think the fundamental question that you're asking has to do with the question of joinder, but I think this court has stated in a fairly recent decision that the issues of joinder under the rules of civil procedure, which is sort of the question that your question has sort of those terms in it, do not apply to administrative proceedings.
And I'm not sure, frankly, that my question had to do with joinder as much as it has to do with the facts of this case. You have several different claims, you have several different employers, and the relief requested is going to impact, at the very least, ICON.
Well, what I would say to the court, if the court wants to decide that Employers Insurance Company was a party of record to the administrative proceeding, the court's free to make that decision. What we're here to argue is that if you make that decision, that does not result in a dismissal of our petition.
How so is are you conceding that you can make it? I share Justice Sada's view on this, that there was a reason the agency consolidated these appeals, is I think what she's saying, in that if you rule in favor of one employer, the other one's off the hook, but if you rule against one employer, the other one is on the hook. So they should all be together, and that was why they were consolidated. You're arguing that we should ignore that and look to the origin where these began as separate proceedings.
Right. Well, and the reason is because the court, again, if the court wants to find Employers Insurance Company was a party to the administrative proceeding, what we would submit to you is that that does not lead to the dismissal that the district court granted in this case. And the reason is because the Otto decision was decided in August 2012, and it radically changed this court's year 2002 interpretation of 233B130 that the court provided in 2002 in the Civil Service Commission case.
Counsel, we're talking about substantial compliance versus some other form, otherwise known as strict compliance.
That's right.
And the fact of the matter isn't there a question of jurisdiction underlying all of this? And if we go backwards in time to civil service, notwithstanding what the case says, I can't I can't debate with you that it doesn't say what you suggest it says, because it does.
Yes.
But I think that was clearly corrected by the Otto decision, and therefore my concern is that whether or not we can simply ignore something that actually goes directly to the jurisdiction, which we all know is something that cannot nor should be discretionary with respect to a determination of whether a court can hear something or not.
I think the court has a grasp of it. The point is that our petition was filed in June 2012, when the Civil Service Commission case was the rule that governed the practice on petitions for judicial review. So our argument is simply that because our petition was filed in June 2012 before the Otto decision was decided, that the only requirement to confer subject matter jurisdiction was timely filing of the petition. We did that. That's uncontested. The naming requirement, which the court changed and created a strict compliance and made it a subject matter jurisdictional requirement. Under the Civil Service Commission, the naming requirement was simply a substantial compliance requirement.
But within that very decision, there was such an inconsistency because they discussed jurisdiction and then backtracked.
Which case?
In civil service.
Well, all I can say is this court very clearly stated that the standard for the naming requirement was substantial compliance, as well as the other requirements, venue and service. And in this case, what we would say is that the employer's insurance and Gutierrez have essentially are equitably estopped or deemed to have waived any argument that we did not substantially comply with the naming requirement that governed our petition at the time that it was filed.
Counsel, you seem to be splitting this into three separate petitions, but yet we have a consolidation at the administrative level of the petitions. So what are we to do with that? Now, I understand your argument very neat and very tidy if we separate this, but we have this consolidation. How do we unring that bell?
Right. I think how you unring that bell is because you've adopted a strict compliance standard that you have to look at the order and you have to look at the motion that prompted the order of consolidation, and you have to decide whether that clearly conveyed to the parties and to this court that that Employers Insurance was made a party to our case, and we could clearly get that from the order and the motion, and that we were made a party, that is Public Agency Compensation Trust and City of Garrison were made a party to the contested cases between Mr. Gutierrez and Employers Insurance Company in Nevada. And that is absolutely unclear in the documents that comprise the order of consolidation in the motion. That wasn't even asked for, nor was it decided.
I may have to step back for a moment. You argued that the timing of the filing of your cause of action should be construed under civil service. But doesn't that then mean that Otto cannot be applied retroactively?
That's correct. In other words, if you want to find that Employers Insurance
it's a two-part question, I'm sorry. In which case, then, if that is so, if we grant your wishes here today,
yes,
then we would be sending a case back down to a court that, under current law, does not have jurisdiction to hear it.
No, I think that's the opposite. If the law that governed our petition was Civil Service Commission, and I think it was, what I would say is that Employers Insurance has fully and completely participated in that case, as has Mr. Gutierrez. So if the court wants to, they cannot contend that we did not substantially comply with the naming requirement. This case can go back down to the district court. They can have their day in court, argue the merits of the case, and however that turns out, it turns out. But what's happened is the merits haven't been decided, because the district court applied Washoe County versus Otto wrongly, retroactively. So I hope that answers your question.
I think so. Thank you.
All right. So now the alternative, this court could also decide that Employers Insurance was not a party to the administrative proceeding. And if the court makes that conclusion, it can also conclude that the petition that we filed, that is that the City of Yarrington and the Public Agency Compensation Trust filed, complied with this court's new interpretation of the requirements of NRS 233B130 set forth in Washoe County versus Otto. In turn, the court can further conclude that Washoe County versus Otto, that decision did not require or mandate the dismissal of our petition for judicial review. In this regard, the phrase party of record to the administrative proceeding in 233B130 has to be interpreted in light of the statutory definitions in the Nevada Administrative Procedures Act, including the definitions of party, contested case, person, and agency. It is the position of the City of Yerington and the Public Agency Compensation Trust that Employers Insurance was never clearly made a party to the contested case between the City of Yerington, Public Agency Compensation Trust, and Mr. Gutierrez. That's appeal number 36690. Similarly, it is the position of the City of Yerington and the Public Agency Compensation Trust that they were never clearly made a party to the contested cases between Employers Insurance and Mr. Gutierrez. That's the appeals 37177 and 37262. In Washoe County versus Otto, the State Board of Equalization held a hearing to decide whether all taxpayers in Incline Village were parties to the contested case before the State Board. Following the hearing, the State Board of Equalization expressly decided that all taxpayers were parties to the single contested case before the Board and created a documentary exhibit to the notice of hearing relating this fact, and also attached to their ultimate decision a documentary exhibit again confirming this fact. In contrast, in the case of Barr, the appeals office never held a hearing on the specific issue whether Employers Insurance was a party to the contested case between the City of Yerington, Public Agency Compensation Trust, and Mr. Gutierrez, it's appeal 36690, nor did the appeals office ever hold a hearing on the specific issue whether the City of Yerington and Public Agency Compensation Trust were a party to the contested cases between Employers Insurance and Mr. Gutierrez. Those were the other two contested cases.
But Mr. Balkenbush, the first sentence of the findings of fact says these are consolidated appeals from two hearing officer decisions. Did your client ever object to the consolidation of these cases?
We did not. In fact, the papers, but the question that you're asking, is it a consolidated hearing? That is it an order simply consolidating the separate contested cases with different parties for a single hearing, which makes sense, or is it an order essentially making all the parties to a single case? And the decision itself, the cases are all listed separately and they're decided separately. So, I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sertic and Ms. Martin, are you going to split your time? Or?
Yes, Your Honor, we would like to do that.
So you'd like 7.5 minutes each?
Yes.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Let me first briefly address, the argument that there were separate proceedings, each of which would require a separate petition for judicial review, and that my client, Employers Insurance, wasn't a party to the proceeding involving PACT, and therefore you need to consider this separately. Although, as I understand the argument, were you to adopt that as the ruling here, it would require that the petition for judicial review be dismissed against my client because, as PACT admits in its brief, they weren't a party to the proceeding involving my client. They therefore couldn't file a petition for judicial review. There was no other petition for judicial review filed. Therefore, my client would be out of the case. Although that would be a great result for my client, I can't stand here and tell you that that's the proper result because it would not be the legitimate legal ruling in this case. There was, we have to admit, there was but one judicial proceeding. One administrative proceeding. They were consolidated. No one ever complained about that, and they were consolidated because you had two claims filed by the claimant against two successive employers, and the issue was which employer was going to be liable under the last injurious exposure rule.
Counsel, should we consider, as pointed out, that it's a joinder matter?
I don't respectfully think it is a joinder matter, Your Honor. There was one proceeding, the statute at issue here, 233B130 speaks of filing a petition for judicial review from the proceeding. We only had one proceeding. It had several cases in it, three, but there was but one administrative proceeding, one decision, and no one ever complained that they should have been split or considered separately. Nevertheless, the fact that there is but one proceeding, Otto still requires that this be, that the petition for judicial review be dismissed. Otto reiterates the doctrine that courts do not have inherent jurisdiction over administrative proceedings. They only have the jurisdiction that is given to them by the legislature. And Otto reiterates the doctrine that strict compliance with the statutory requirement of that statute is required to exercise jurisdiction.
Mr. Sotic, question, if in fact we apply Otto retroactively, as you suggest, or as I suspect you're going to continue to argue, then it's a pretty harsh result. And isn't it true that, in fact, this case was filed under the old law, for better or for worse? It came under that consideration, and they would have been in substantial compliance under that particular line of authority.
You're correct, Your Honor. It is a harsh result, and sometimes bright-line rules frequently have harsh results, and one side or the other always believes that to be unfair. But with regard to the unfairness issue, it certainly isn't any more unfair to PACT in this case than it was to Washoe County when the clarification of the rule was announced in Otto. Additionally, this court recently held in Levitt versus Symes, 130 Nevada Advanced Opinion 54, just in July, that retroactivity is the default rule in civil cases, and that the issue was the standard for expert testimony to rebut a plaintiff's case in chief, and that rule was applied retroactively. I would also point out that this court has recently retroactively applied the Otto decision. In the case of Liberty Mutual versus Thomason, 130 Nevada Advanced Opinion 4, back in February of this year, which was a workers' compensation case, the court applied Otto to require dismissal of a petition for judicial review. Now, in that case, the issue was subsection B of the statute we're talking about, which is the place of filing. The legislature said if you want to file a petition for judicial review, you have to do it where the administrative proceeding was held, in Carson City District Court, or where the aggrieved party resides. And in that case, the insurance company filed the petition in Washoe County. The hearing had been held here, like in this case, and the court said Otto states that the statutory rule is mandatory and has to be strictly complied with. You didn't file it in one of the three jurisdictions that the statute allows, and therefore it has to be dismissed. And what's interesting about that case is, like here, the petition for judicial review was filed before the Otto case came out. But additionally, the appeal to this court was filed before the Otto case was issued. And this court had no problem in applying that retroactively. I would submit that the Otto case is more properly construed as a clarification of the existing law rather than a pronouncement of new law. And, in fact, a case cited by the appellants here, Mitchell v. State, 122 Nevada 1269, says that when the court clarifies its existing law, that always applies retroactively. That happened to be a criminal case on felony murder rule, and there had been a change in the law. And when the court actually changed the law, they said, we're overruling the prior one. But when it came to the Mitchell case, they said, well, yeah, we used the term overrule, but what we were really doing is clarifying the existing law, and that will apply retroactively. And here, the existing law is the statute that confers jurisdiction on this court, 233B130. It didn't change. What changed in Otto was this court's clarification of it. And to the point that was raised in the first question, if Otto isn't retroactively applied, we will have a situation where you have inconsistent results, where similar cases are treated differently. Imagine two petitions for judicial review, both of which are defective because they don't name all the parties as respondents. One is filed before Otto, so that has jurisdiction, and the other filed after Otto, that doesn't have jurisdiction. That's a result that the law should avoid. And with that, I turn our remaining time over to Ms. Moore. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Ms. Moore? Hmm.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the Court. As has been stated already, this hearing today revolves around the Washoe County v. Otto case and its applicability to the current matter. Now, NRS 233B, subsection 130, subparagraph 2A, states that petitions for judicial review must name as respondents the agencies and all parties to the administrative proceedings. Now, it's been argued before you today that what's truly at issue is who were the proper parties at the administrative proceeding. Now, as we recognize and have discussed briefly, the underlying issue with the administrative proceeding was the applicability of the last injurious exposure rule. And by its very nature, the last injurious exposure rule requires three parties. It requires a worker to be injured while working for an employer, employer A, and a subsequent injury while the injured worker is working for employer B. That doctrine, by its very nature, requires all three of those parties. All three of those parties were present at the hearing that was scheduled on April 3rd, 2012. Those parties were Mr. Gutierrez, Employers Insurance Company, and the City of Urington and Public Agency Compensation Trust. One decision and order was issued by the appeals officer, and that decision and order was what the Public Agency Compensation Trust and the City of Urington based its petition for judicial review upon. Now, as stated, 233B130 subparagraph 2A requires that all parties to the proceeding below be named in the petition. City of Urington and Public Agency Trust failed to do so. They left out an integral party to that proceeding below, and that's Employers Insurance Company. They've argued before you today that somehow that jurisdictional requirement can be waived. They have argued in the brief that by filing subsequent documents, including employers in the caption of those subsequent documents, cures their error. However, the requirement is that the petition itself include the names of all the parties below. And that did not occur. Since that did not occur, jurisdiction was not conferred upon the court. Appellant also cites several cases in its opening brief for the proposition that Otto should only be applied prospectively and not retroactively. They cite Burden v. Smith, which is a 1922 case discussing prospective application of statutes. That's not the case we have. There was not a newly enacted statute. They also cite State XRL State Board of Equalization versus Barta, a 2008 case discussing prospective application of regulations. Again, that is not the case that we have here today. And lastly, Mitchell v. State, as was analyzed earlier, is a 2006 criminal case. Criminal cases and civil cases have different standards, and as stated by counsel, this court has recently held in Levitt v. Sims that in a civil case, the default standard or the default rule is retroactive applicability. So, Your Honors, applying the decision in the Otto case is necessary in this particular case as well. The court, in deciding Otto, applied its decision to those litigants. Similarly, as Mr. Sertic has stated, in the case of Liberty Mutual versus Thomason, the Otto case was applied retroactively to those litigants as well. So, Your Honors, Otto must be applied retroactively, and in that, the City of Yerington and Public Agency Trust did not name a party to the proceedings below, their petition must be dismissed.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Balkenbush, you have about 3 minutes.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor. The first point I'd like to address is the last one by Counsel Sheila Moore. One of the points she made actually illustrates the strength of our case. We argued below, and we still contend today, that the question of who is responsible for the total knee replacement is governed by the claim reopening standard. Under the claim reopening standard, employer's insurance company did not need to be a party to our case. The only people that need to be a party to our case were City of Yerington, Public Agency Compensation Trust, and Mr. Gutierrez. Similarly, on the 1979 claim, on the reopening, if the reopening standard governs that, the only parties necessary to that decision would have been employer's insurance company and Gutierrez. Those cases
Counsel,
could have, yes.
Understanding your argument from your standpoint of who needed to be there, wasn't it not a consolidated appeal?
What I would say, Judge, and I want to make sure that I drive this home with, because Justice Hardesty made this point, we didn't oppose the consolidation because we understood, and the evidence, I think, establishes that, the record evidence establishes that it was an order for a single hearing. It was not an order making employer's insurance company a party to our case. It was not an order of consolidation making us a party to their contested cases. And as I just illustrated with the question we argued is that the reopening
didn't standard, the outcome or the ruling by the administrative officer
you see that
dealing
question.
With the totality of what was before the appeals officer, all issues from both or all three cases?
Could you speak up just a little bit?
What I'm asking, you keep wanting to parcel this into single parcels, and I'm saying, couldn't the final outcome deal with it as a unified matter, so to speak?
My answer to that question is, it was all the contested cases were separately decided in a single decision. The appeals officer signed the decision. It was drafted by counsel for employers insurance.
Was there an objection to that?
What's that, Your Honor?
Was there an objection to that final order?
I don't think it changes the outcome. The fact that the end of
was
the
there or was there not?
What?
An objection to it.
To the fact that the case was
written
in a single decision?
Yes.
No, I don't think that one needed to be, Your Honor. I know we did. What I wanted to say just in the last couple of minutes that I had was that counsel for employers insurance said about unfairness. There's a distinct difference in unfairness in this case if this court were to uphold the dismissal. Washoe County was on notice as to who the parties were to the contested case. There was an exhibit to the board's notice of hearing, the State Board of Equalization's board of their notice of hearing, and to their decision. In our case, if you look at the order of consolidation, you look at the motion, there is no notice that's conveyed that we were made a party or that Employers Insurance was made a party to our case, nor that we were made a party to their contested case.
I think your time's up, Mr. Balkenbush, and thank you again. Thank you, all counsel, for your excellent arguments and briefs in this case, and this case will stand.